Recording in progress. Recording stopped. Recording in progress. Recording stopped.
Good morning, members, and everyone in the meeting. Chairperson is trying to connect. She will join us shortly. Thank you.
Hello, Chair.
Good morning.
Oh, I just wanted to check if the meeting has started because I thought there's something wrong with my device.
No, the meeting has not started. I'm still waiting for Chair to connect. She was trying to connect.
Sure, Ned.
Thanks.
Recording in progress.
Morning, morning, Nelifa, Yangis. Monitor, yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm connected with my phone. I'm trying to open my other gadget. Good morning, honorable members and
recording
officials of the department.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chair.
Morning,
morning
Chair.
Morning. I'm trying to open my other gadget, but now I've connected with my phone, but I'm going to close my video now so that I can be able to continue with our meeting, because I'm hotspotting with this phone. You are all welcome, honorable members and officials of the department. And I declare this meeting officially open. I think we can now get apologies from Nelisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair and members and the support staff. I received one apology from Honorable Sharif, who is not feeling well. And then an apology from the minister and the deputy minister, who are both attending a cabinet meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, with those, we've got only two apologies.
It's minister and deputy minister, and then Honorable Sharif.
Okay. Okay, our agenda, we've got only one item, ne?
It's two, Chair, and the minutes after the presentation.
Okay. Is the DG part of the meeting?
I'm here, Chair.
Okay, DG. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you.
We can now allow the DG to make the presentation. Nelisa, what you have sent is an old thing. Let me check the other email. Over to you, Titi.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson.
Morning.
All members of the committee, Minister and Deputy Minister in their absence. I will not waste time by...
Recording in progress.
I will not waste time by making opening remarks, because what I'm going to say is what both the department and the NYDA are going to say. There are two presentations before the committee today. Is the presentation on the integrated youth development strategy and the monitoring and evaluation framework on the national youth policy. So I will hand over to the CEO of the National Youth Development Agency, Mr. Wasim Karim, to present on the integrated youth development strategy. Thank you, Mr. Karim, and I hand over to you.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members.
Morning, CEO. Morning.
Okay, so this is our presentation this morning on the Integrated Youth Development Strategy. Through the Office of the Minister, we would have requested an audience with the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities to present the Integrated Youth Development Strategy, and we thank the committee for giving us this opportunity to consult you as one of the key stakeholders in the development of the strategy. In terms of what I will present to colleagues today, we're going to look at overall what the landscape looks like in terms of South Africa's youth policy and strategy. We'll do a quick scan of South Africa's demographic profile for young people, the methodology that we follow to develop the IYDF. We'll then go through the five pillars that are in the Integrated Youth Development Strategy. We will advise members on the consultation process that we followed, and we'll do a small slide on ME, but Dr. Benito will focus more on the monitoring and evaluation. In terms of South Africa's youth policy, we know that policy in South Africa is guided by the National Development Plan in 2030, and we, as a government, we remain committed to the goals that are set out in the NDP. The NDP indicates that we, in terms of young people, we must develop nutrition interventions for all pregnant women and young children, that young people must have universal access to 2 years of early childhood development, that the schooling system needs to be improved to increase the number of students which are achieving above 50% in literacy and math, and that learner retention needs to be increased to 90%, and we also need to bolster teacher training. Youth service needs to be strengthened, and new community-based programs must be offered to offer young people life skills training, entrepreneurship, and opportunities to participate in community development. The number of TVET colleges must be expanded, and participation must be increased to 25%. The graduation rate of young people in TVET must be increased to 75%. Students from poor families must receive funding assistance that covers tuition, books, accommodation, and living allowances. There must be community safety centers to prevent crime, and youth must be included in these initiatives. Tax incentives must be introduced to reduce the cost of hiring young labor market entrants. There must be a subsidy to the placement sector to prepare and place matric graduates into work. Learnerships must be expanded, and training vouchers must be made available to job seekers. There must be a formalized graduate recruitment scheme for the public service to attract highly skilled people. And the role of state-owned enterprises in training artisans and technical professionals must be expanded. If we look at this, if we look at what exists currently, we know that already there is a youth employment tax incentive which is administered by the South African Revenue Service. Estimations indicate that it supports about 1 million jobs in the economy, and that tax incentive has been extended by the National Treasury until 2028. We know that we have a skills development levy, which is paid over by many companies and government organizations in South Africa, and that is administered and paid over to the National Skills Fund and the CETAs. We also know that the CETA mandate through the Department of Higher Education and Training has been extended also for another 10 years. We have the Youth Employment Service, which is linked to the BBBEE scorecard of the DTI. We have quite a number of implementation agencies, the NYDA, the jobs funds. Public employment, CWP, supports about 250,000 jobs. And I think we know that the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, in spite of its challenges, has really scaled, particularly since the pronouncement of free education for families with household income below 350,000. What does South Africa's demographic profile for young people look like? Of the total population of 7 million, about 20.5 million are young people between the ages of 15 to 34. We know that the unemployment rate for young people is very high. The quarterly labor force survey was released yesterday. Youth unemployment globally is high, but South Africa is higher than its developmental peers. In terms of urban versus rural profile, 64% of young people are urbanized, 32% live in rural areas, and 4% are living on farms and agricultural areas. About 49.8% are female and about 50.1% are male. 85% of young people are black African, 8% are colored, 5% are white, and 2% are Indian. In terms of, we must hear from young people in terms of what their perceptions of the country are. I did present the slide to the PC previously, so I'm just going to touch on in that young people do believe that the country is improving in many aspects. They cite housing, they cite education, they notice that government is trying to make changes. But young people feel negative in that there's too much corruption, there's no work, there's no jobs.
Recording stopped.
I think it's also important that when developing an integrated youth development strategy, you cannot avoid the fact that COVID-19 has been a huge shock to our systems. It's been a huge shock from an economic perspective, from a health perspective, from a social perspective. So what are young people saying in COVID-19? They cite that access to data is one of the most significant barriers to equality before and after the lockdown. In the lockdown, 63% of young people do not have an income. Many young people have to use the child
care grant
to help themselves. Young people are eager to learn, but data barriers are really significant for them. And that when we're able to reduce the cost of data or make sites data free, young people have more opportunities to access learning and earning opportunities. I think it's important that we continue to listen to the voices of young people, because they will help to lead us out of the crisis. So what is the methodology that we follow to develop the integrated youth development strategy? Firstly, in terms of the NYDA Act, we are required to develop an integrated youth development plan. Section 3 sets that out for us. And then also develop guidelines for the implementation of an integrated national youth development policy and make recommendations to the president. In terms of the methodology that we follow, we determine what the youth development landscape in South Africa looks like. We review key documents, and these are for example, but not limited to, the 25-year review, the manifesto, the medium-term strategic framework, and the medium-term expenditure framework. We engage the key departments and entities which are directly involved in youth development, and then we engage the departments and entities which are indirectly involved in youth development. We publish a first draft for public comment. We consult business, we consult civil society, we consult organized labor, we consult youth formation. We consult at provincial level, and then we consult at national level. We also cite today's consultation as a very important process. Once we've done consultations, we include all of the consultation inputs and we publish a final draft version. And then we submit to the cabinet for approval through our department and through our minister. I think it's important to also say that the IYDS fits into a broader policy agenda of government. So at the top level, we have the National Development Plan, and now we have the approved National Youth Policy for 2030. In this administration, we have the medium-term strategic framework, which runs up to 2025. So the IYDS is set out for two periods. First, from the period to 2021 to 2025, and then for the period 2025 to 2030. In terms of the five pillars of the IYDS, we have economic transformation, we have education and skills development, we have health, we have social cohesion, we have effective youth development machinery, and all of these are consulted processes. When the goal of the IYDS is not to merely produce a document and then leave it to gather dust, but rather it's an accountability mechanism for the entirety of society. So the commitment that we want to make in terms of IYDS is not only consulting prior to the preparation of the document, but rather to provide annual accountability in terms of the targets which are set in terms of IYDF and giving feedback to the youth sector. Just in terms of where we are at this point in time, we've completed many of the tasks assigned in terms of IYDS. We're currently in progress of the last three items and then some final submission to the cabinet. I've set out what the five pillars of IYDS look like. So let's start getting into the five pillars specifically. So the first one is economic transformation. So I think we know in the economy, really, we're going to focus on two things, and that is it is self-employment activities and then the labor market, right? So we know that in self-employment, and I've presented these slides to the committee previously, so I'm not going to focus too much on the problems, but rather what the targets look like. We know that South African entrepreneurs are participating less than their African counterparts. We also see correlations between secondary education and entrepreneurship activity. So the more chance, the better outcomes of secondary education, the more likelihood of producing better entrepreneurs. Generally, we also see that immigrants have responded more effectively to employment and business in South Africa, that our informal sector is not growing as fast as it should, and young people, to absorb the amount of labor capacity we have, we need to stimulate the growth in the informal sector. We see that about roughly 1.8 million informal SMMEs, one third are led by youth and one third of that are headed by women. In terms of common informal sector occupations for young men, these are taxi drivers and motor vehicle mechanics, and for young women, beauticians and street food vendors. If we support these young men and women, we'll help to drive a more inclusive recovery. And without their livelihood strategies, the poverty gap will grow in South Africa and inequality will increase. I think it's also important to state that there's very structural issues when we reflect on youth self-employment, right? Many young people and people start as entry-level entrepreneurs by producing the basic goods that are needed locally, right? So being able to sell immediately within your community and then growing your market from there. But in South Africa, local markets for basic consumer goods are already so infiltrated by large incumbents. You think about how big supply chains and competitors like Boxer and ShopRite have been able to establish them and push mass-produced brands into townships, into rural areas, yeah? And this creates very limited incidences of small-scale manufacturing in townships, and it's rather retailers that distribute mass-produced goods having a much more common entry point into the market. There's also the implications of spatial inequality, which really concentrates poverty within structures of cities, towns, and villages. And these create and it creates exclusion. The distance of townships from economic centers can add cost to production activities because market access points are located elsewhere. And these structural constraints and marginal economic constraints, they reflect in outcomes, right? As much as we've pinned our policy hopes on small business, it's an inconvenient truth that small enterprises in the formal sector are not creating employment on the scale that South Africa needs to. Yeah. Formal SMMEs account for 98% of the formal firms in South Africa, right? But they only account for 30% of the jobs. And generally, internationally, small businesses account for 60% to 70% of jobs in the economy. So there's deep structural issues which need to be resolved. On the job side, I think we saw the quarterly labor force survey yesterday. Of the roughly 1.2 million young people entering the labor market every year, only about 200,000 to 300,000 are able to find gainful employment. We know that the dropout rate at basic education is the main driver of unemployment, and those young people who have less than a matric certificate make up the majority of the unemployed. What do young people themselves, in our consultations, what do young people themselves say about what is the drivers of unemployment? Young people feel that corruption and nepotism drive up the numbers of unemployment. They believe that in many cases, families have to resort to paying bribes to be able to be employed. Experience is seen as a massive barrier for entry into the labor market. Yeah? Young people feel that while they get internships, they're not able to get the knowledge in speciality areas that allow them to get the skills they need to translate those internship opportunities into more permanent forms of employment. Poverty is a vicious cycle which leads to unemployment, and many young people then have to resort to crime as a result of challenges of poverty. Yeah? And young people cite exclusion in the fact that they often have high costs of facilities, amenities, and these make it hard to find employment. And yeah, many young people feel neglected. Yeah, I know many rural young people feel neglected. So we're going to reflect on what the medium-term strategic framework says in terms of economic transformation and job creation. Yeah, and really there's three major interventions that have been committed to by the administration to change the landscape, particularly of the labor market. So this is the creation of jobs through...
Recording in progress.
And the number of work opportunities through public employment programs should be 5 million work opportunities. So scaling the opportunities that are currently available in EPWP and CWP. The Presidential Youth Employment Intervention has made a commitment of 1 million new jobs over and above what's already been committed by 2024. In terms of an enabling environment through policy and regulations, the employment policy will be implemented by 2024. In terms of the visa regime to try and accelerate the number of people visiting South Africa through tourism, the e-visa scheme has already been implemented, but 95% of visa applications must be adjudicated by 4 weeks by 2022. In terms of additional outcomes, government has committed to improving the ease of doing business, to develop demand skills planning to support growth, to ensure that the macroeconomic policy in terms of fiscal policy and monetary policy support the goals in terms of employment creation, to review the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Scorecard, to establish legislation for worker, community, and HDI ownership, to ensure the implementation of the Employment Equity Act to eliminate gender and wage disparities, to review the financial sector code to support transformation in the sector, to also reduce illicit financial flows and misuse of tax havens, and to reduce the illicit economy activity. In terms of these outcomes, the targets that have been committed to is to improve our World Bank of ease of doing business and to break into the top 50 countries by 2024, to produce the skills priority plan by 2020, to review the macroeconomic policy framework by 2022, to create the framework for a just transition to a low carbon economy by 2022, to incorporate legislation for worker, community, and HDI ownership by 2022, and I think in the DTIC budget vote, this was covered quite significantly. That 3% of transaction values accrue to all workers and communities in terms of percentage of BBBE transactions, and that there would be 1,640 employment equity inspections conducted per year by the Department of Employment and Labour. The financial sector code must be reviewed and implemented by the end of 2020, that illicit financial flows must be reduced by 10% per annum, and that the illicit economy unit in the South African Revenue Service must be fully functional. In terms of reindustrialization of the economy, there must be a conducive environment that enables national priority sectors to support industrialization and localization. And these should lead to increased exports, employment, and youth and women-owned SME participation. Localization and industrialization should be supported through government procurement. In terms of the indicators, the DTIC is developing the master plans for the 8 sectors. The national priority sectors should contribute to GDP growth of 3%, and exports should be increased by 4% per annum. And all of the 15 industrial parks must be revitalized. There must be 100% compliance for all government spend on designated products and services. Then in terms of improving our competitiveness as a country through ICT adoption, the spectrum licensing, the broadband rollout, and reducing the cost of communications is an outcome. There should be increased investment on gross expenditure on research and development, and there should be commercialization of public sector funded intellectual property. The indicators is that high demand spectrum must be allocated by the end of 2020. The licensing framework for 5G should be also communicated, and the DCDP is leading and contributing to the high spectrum rollout. In terms of percentage increase in broadband penetration, currently only 54% of the population have access to the internet, and the target is that by the end of 2024, 80% of the population should have access. The data cost and the eradication of skewed price setting by dominant players. South Africa is ranked 31st in Africa for the price of 1 gig of data. By the end of 2024, South Africa must be the cheapest for a bundle of 1 gigabyte of data. Currently, we spend 0.8% of GDP on research and development. This must be up to 1.1% of GDP by 2024. Then in terms of improving our competitiveness and or making our markets more competitive and more accessible, we must reduce the high levels of economic concentration, and this must be done through the Competition Amendment Act. We must facilitate the increase in the number of small businesses with focus on township and rural economies and rural development. We must strengthen the development finance towards SME development. There must be SME development through incubation centers and digital hubs. There must be localization and buy local campaigns. There should be tax breaks to support the establishment of new youth-owned startups. I think we know that infrastructure has been identified as a key component of job creation, and therefore we must improve the quality and rate of infrastructure investment. Given that we are in a week of load shedding again, the supply of energy is critical towards the reinvigoration of the economy. And in there, you'll see that there's various targets which are set around particularly Eskom and increasing generation capacity and increasing the reserve margins to really end load shedding and have reliable energy security in the country. There's also targets which are set in terms of water security, in terms of affordable transport in the country. Some of these indicators, they relate to the quality of investment to support job growth in terms of the infrastructure fund, the targets which are set for the energy sector, the targets which are set for the water sector, and the targets which are then set for access to affordable and reliable transport systems. In the MTSF around economy, we know that the economic targets are more structural in nature, but there's specific targets which are set for women, youth, and persons with disabilities. The real outcome here is that there must be increased economic participation, ownership, access to resources for vulnerable groups. And in there, for example, you see on government spend on women, youth, and persons with disabilities, we see minimum 40% targets for women, 30% for youth, 7% for people living with disabilities. There's also specific provincial targets which are set by all 9 provinces in terms of their contribution to economic transformation and then growing the economy and creating more jobs and more self-employment opportunities for young people and for vulnerable groups. There's also a target in relation to spatial planning, which we think, which we identified as a challenge. So there are targeted programs to expand access to land ownership in urban and rural areas, including title deeds for women, youth, and persons with disabilities. There's programs to accelerate equitable access to land ownership. And there's infrastructure and neighborhood development grants and tax rebates. And most of these targets are sitting in the Department of Human Settlements and Water and Sanitation. Let's move to education and skills development, pillar number two. So I think the key issue within the basic education system is, let's look at the growth in pass rates over the last 10 years or so, and we see a consistent increase. We broke through the 80% barrier in 2019. So there's been a general improvement in the matric pass rate over the last 11 years or so. The real challenge is in terms of the dropout rate. So that slide kind of shows you the young people. So look at how many young people enter school. 99.3% enter grade one, and I mean, it's really fantastic in that we've increased access to education in the country. But if we go down and you start to look, the numbers really start to get worrying around grade nine, right? Because of the 99.3% who started grade one, only 89.7% are now in grade nine. And then look at how it starts to plunge, right? Another 9% dropout in grade 10, another 12% dropout in grade 11, and a 17% dropout in grade 12. So when you finally get to grade 12, only of the 99.3% young people who started, only 52% of them are actually writing a matric certificate. That next slide kind of shows you of the young people who are writing matrics, those who are passing matrics, and those who are getting a bachelor's pass, and you see that massive reduction from those who are writing matric, almost 520,000, but just over 150,000 obtaining a bachelor's pass, right? And look at how many are passing maths at the minimum of 40%. So our basic education system is not necessarily giving us the results we want from an education perspective in terms of developing a high-skilled economy. And this is in spite of the fact that we spend 18% of our annual budget on basic education. Though we've achieved near universal access to education, this has not translated into positive educational outcomes. Generally, when we compare ourselves, our literacy and numeracy stats are lower than that of our global counterparts. There's many role players in the education of young people. Parental involvement in young people's education has been shown to have positive benefits for educational attainment. It's even more important where student-to-teacher ratios means that young people don't have sufficient attention in the classroom. Yet because of socioeconomic conditions in South Africa where parents are single parents or they work long hours to be provided, young people often lack parental involvement. School governing bodies are important for accountability at school level. The appointment of STBs is an important step in creating accountability. However, many STBs don't have sufficient quality individuals who can manage the complex challenges and develop the practical solutions to solve these challenges. Government has doubled its investment in education over the last 20 years, but despite this, there's many challenges, right? There's a view that government is not sufficiently regulating the time that teachers are spending in the classroom, and that strike action of teachers can consume as much as 10 school days a year. Other challenges that we need to think about is ongoing changes to the curriculum, which makes it hard for teachers and learners to adjust, inadequate teacher training and support mechanisms, teaching time in comparison to other school activities, infrastructure in schools is still lacking. We know the issues associated with pit latrines, for example, which don't create a conducive environment for learning. Also, better teachers are not attracted to poorly resourced schools as it impacts on the individual performance. In terms of teachers, it's estimated that 18,000 to 22,000 teachers leave the profession every year, while higher education institutions produce 6,000 to 10,000 new teacher graduates a year. I think it's also, yeah, we must consider the impact of COVID-19. So many teachers have lost their lives COVID-19 as well. Many of our new graduate teachers are attracted to international training opportunities, which offer more benefits than local training opportunities or teaching opportunities. The shift of the teaching profession from training colleges to universities has lowered the number of teachers being produced. Studies have also indicated that 20% of teachers are absent on Mondays and Fridays. An additional issue that has been flagged has been sexual involvement of teachers with students, which creates an unsafe learning environment. In schools where principals enforce discipline amongst teachers, results and outcomes of student performance are much better. In terms of learners, we see that there are two major issues that hamper progress. One is drug and substance abuse, even at primary education level. This affects young people's ability to learn from a young age. The second is teenage pregnancy, and where the South African Constitution and Bills of Rights protect the rights of pregnant mothers to return to school, our view is that only one-third end up returning post-pregnancy. Violence remains an issue in schools. Rape, sometimes by teachers themselves, is an experience of young boys, but mainly girls attending school. Other forms of sexual abuse, pregnancy, poverty, all play a marked role in educational outcomes. What about higher education? So if we look at funding of higher education, although we've increased it a lot, we're still lower than our countries with similar economic development. Of our young people who drop out of higher education, 70% would be considered lower economic status. And this means that race and economic status both continue to play a role in terms of educational disadvantage in higher education. Access to higher education has again improved substantially, just like basic education. In 1994, 55% of students at public universities were Black African. Today, this is closer to 80 to 90%. Yeah? NASFAS has evolved over the years. So if we look at NASFAS, it was distributing 441 million in 1999, 8.5 billion in 2013. Between 2013, it's almost doubled. So it's supporting about 15.4 billion. Yeah, and that was the main driver of that was the Fees Must Fall campaign of 2015. If you look at the scale of NASFAS, it's also visible, right? In 1991, TEFTA funded about 7,200 students. In 2019-20, NASFAS funded 550,000 students. So you can't dispute the role that NASFAS has played in impacting not only on access, but also on student progress and social mobility. In the period 2005 to 2015, 91% of NASFAS graduates have found employment. University graduates are at 95%, which is higher than TVET graduates. But here's the really concerning data. Of the students that NASFAS funds, only 46% end up graduating. And given the substantial financial investment, this is a disappointing graduation rate. There's also higher employment absorption for students who come from the engineering, health professionals, clinical sciences, education and architecture, built environment. And these are higher than graduates from public management, social sciences, languages, linguistics, and literature fields. In terms of skills, South Africa is very characterized by a two-economy challenge, the formal and the informal. So the skills development levy, while it has a massive impact on the formal economy, it has very little impact on the informal economy. Yeah, because those businesses are not registered for the skills development levy, and it makes it very hard for them to benefit. We have found that the skills development levy does benefit particularly internships, learnerships, but it seems to benefit larger firms more than smaller ones. And this is similar to international findings on the skills levy or tax. What do young people themselves, when we talk to young people, what do they say about education, right? They say that TVET colleges are sometimes inaccessible, particularly in rural areas, and sometimes they find that they're ineffective as well, right? They also feel that when learners drop out of school, there's a perceived lack of support and second chances for them. In Limpopo specifically, youth expressed a concern on lack of access to TVET colleges. There's a concern about the shortage of educators and classrooms that will accommodate learners. Young people feel that they don't get enough career guidance from educators. The proposal is that career guidance must start at high school level. And educators, particularly life orientation, must help them in choosing subject streams so that they can have a pathway trajectory. Young people also feel that lowering the standard of pass marks in matrix affects their performance at tertiary level. Young people would like the school leaving age to be in matric to be increased from 18 to 20 years. Young people feel that there's a need to bring back technical schools for those who have more artisanal capacities. And the lack of security within school premises is said to expose learners to illegal substances and dangerous work. What does the medium-term strategic framework say in terms of outcomes, right? So we want to better prepare our young people for further studies in the world of work before grade 9. Therefore, we need more effective approaches to teacher development, such as professional communities of learning, PLCs. There needs to be sample-based systematic evaluation programs to monitor progress against the Sustainable Development Goals. There needs to be building on past successes in terms of improving learner access to textbooks and workbooks to ensure that no learners are without the materials that they need. There needs to be introduction of coding and robotics and subjects which are aligned to 4IR in the curriculum. There needs to be improved collaboration with universities and the Funza Lushaka bursary program to ensure that we are producing enough young teachers with the right skills. There needs to be better accountability for principals, which should be fair based on data and take into account socioeconomic context of schools. And then I think one thing that has fallen off the radar, and there was a big conversation before COVID-19, was the general education certificate in grade 9 to facilitate the movement of young people between schools and TVET colleges, particularly those who cannot cope academically beyond grade 9. So in terms of the indicators and the targets, in all districts by 2024, there must be teacher development conducted as per the district evaluation plan, that the new systematic evaluation must be operational in all provinces, the number of learners with access to the required maths and other textbooks must be at 100% level, and that coding and robotics must be in the curriculum by 2023. The percentage of Funza Lushaka bursary holders placed within schools within 6 months, the baseline is 84%, it should be up to 90% by 2024. There must be better accountability systems for district and school management. There must be policies pertaining to the conduct, administration, and management of the general education certificates by 2022. Then in terms of particularly the national senior certificate, there must be increased access amongst historically disadvantaged learners to niche subjects such as engineering and computing. There must be programs for the improvement of teacher subject knowledge and training skills. Second chances have to be improved for the national senior certificates. This three-stream model must be introduced to cater for differently talented learners. Focus schools must be introduced to nurture talent across different disciplines. Excuse me. Programs must be implemented to enhance performance in second chances. I think we've spoken about the three-stream model, and the number of focus schools for high-tech, maritime, aviation, and arts, the five focus schools must be rolled out by 2024. If we look at infrastructure, the interventions that should be implemented.
Recording stopped.
Is that the number of schools completed and handed over for use should be 337 new schools by 2024. The number of schools identified through the SAFE program have sanitation that meets minimum infrastructure norms. There should be a number of special and multi-grade schools which have access to electronic devices. Schools must have access to ICT devices. The education faculty management system should be developed at provincial level. Schools should be connected by 2024, and there should be digitized textbooks at all school levels. Let's move to higher education, right? So in terms of there needs to be expanded access to post-school education and training opportunities. So there should be enrollment plans for universities, for TVET colleges, as well as community colleges. We need to develop sustainable funding models, including norms and standards across the board. I think we cannot have the ongoing annual start of the year protests, particularly at institutions of higher learning. We need to ensure that eligible students receive funding through NASFAS. There needs to be required agreements, financing,
infrastructure,
and disability growth. The CETAs need to identify the number of work-based opportunities and make more information available for work-based learning. There needs to be established centers of specialization to support students with disabilities in the TVET sector. There also needs to be macro infrastructure framework at universities, TVET colleges, and CET colleges. And there is the commitments of the additional TVET colleges which will be established by the Department of Higher Education and Training. There also needs to be a review of the Open View and Access LTSM for students in TVET colleges. And we need to encourage more take-up of artisanal trades as a career choice amongst young people. There we've listed the targets for in terms of expanded access for post-school education and training opportunities. Then there needs to be increased success and efficiency in the post-school education and training process. There needs to be greater capacity building programs at universities. There needs to be increase in the number of TVET learners which are attending foundation-based courses. We need to eradicate NATED and NCV certification backlogs. And there needs to be implementation of IT examinations for TVET colleges. Those are the targets which are implemented, and there you'll see, for example, for the old IT exam, there's a replacement process by 2021. TVET learners which are enrolled in pre-vocational learning programs, the baseline is 368. The Department of Higher Education and Training wants that number up to 7,000. And then in terms of the backlog, which is a huge issue, the backlog is about 15,800. That must be 100% cleared by 2024. In terms of the quality of post-school education or training, there the interventions are increasing the number of universities offering accredited TVET college learners, TVET college lecturer qualifications, implementation of the new generation of academic programs, as well as developing standards for good governance in public TVET colleges and community colleges. To pursue careers in the agricultural value chain, and there must be a promotion of entrepreneurship in TVET colleges through the establishment of hubs. There also is a need to train young artisans through centers of specialization at TVET colleges. There needs to be compulsory digital skills training at TVET colleges. There needs to be support to universities to implement student-focused entrepreneurship program. There needs to be strengthening of the skills planning program, and they need to be conducting IP awareness sessions at TVET colleges. These are the specific targets then that relate to a responsive post-school education training system. The provinces have also committed to specific provincial gains around particularly basic education to support better outcomes for young people in the basic education system. Let's move to health, right? So what do we see in terms of health? The key data shows us that South African youth are at risk for unprotected sex, for unhealthy eating habits and violence, all of which start many times in their youthful years and continues into adulthood. Sexual behavior simultaneously results in social and educational problems such as the failure to complete high school, unemployment, crime, morbidity, and sometimes mortality. Research shows that at least a quarter of women in sub-Saharan Africa use modern contraceptive methods. In South Africa, estimates of the proportion of women of reproductive age using modern contraceptive methods has increased steadily from about 26% to about 37%. A South African study which was done amongst learners in grades 8, 9, and 10 in public schools across 8 districts in the Western Cape shows that use of tobacco, alcohol, and cannabis were the 3 most frequent reported substances used by grade 8 to 10 learners in the Western Cape. Alcohol was the most regularly reported substance, with 66% of learners reported having used alcohol. Among learners who reported lifetime use of alcohol, more than 33% currently use, 25% reported alcohol use in the week before they would have studied. Almost 25% say they indulged in drinking in 2 weeks prior to that. Among those who drank alcohol, 33% reported early initiation of alcohol use, that was before the age of 13, with 10% reporting alcohol use on a weekly basis. Only a very small percentage, 2%, reported being drunk on a daily or weekly basis. Young men were more likely than young women to report indulged drinking, weekly alcohol use, and weekly drunkenness. Suicide has become a significant public health problem in South Africa. The average rate of suicide in 2019 was 17.2 per 100,000, accounting for 8% of all deaths. Results from surveys conducted by the South African Medical Research Council highlight that at least 1 in 5 adolescents have considered suicide. Research on risky behaviors indicate that many factors influence suicide attempts among young people. This includes the effects of alcohol, being threatened by someone with a weapon, bullying, which have all been associated. Information in violence in South Africa shows that adolescents who are involved in bullying, either as victims or perpetrators, are seen as more likely to be socially isolated than those who are not involved, and many of them lack a sense of belonging. A national survey of violence at schools indicated that 24% of learners were bullied on school property. In terms of sexual and reproductive health, I think we've seen a massive decline in terms of HIV incidence amongst adolescents and young women. This has declined by 60% between 2004 and 2018. Teenage pregnancy is also on the decline. In terms of health, what do young people say around health? Young people feel that issues of resources such as availability for medicine for HIV and AIDS or contraceptive for female youth and the shortage of healthcare personnel are concerning to them. In provinces next to ports of entry, young people express concern that illegal immigrants take up jobs that they should be employed. Sorry, that should be related to the economic consultation. So what is government's plan in terms of health, right? In terms of our broader health agenda, the legal framework is being created for the implementation of the national health insurance. And I think, although it has criticisms, we've seen in countries like the United Kingdom how a national health insurance has lowered the cost of healthcare, but has also supported people and comprehensive healthcare for the population. In terms of universal health coverage, there's also a plan to roll out a quality health improvement plan in public facilities to ensure that they meet the quality standards required for certification and accreditation. There's a plan to develop comprehensive policy to mitigate the risks related to medical litigation. Our health budget loses a massive amount of money as a result of litigation and medical claims, and these are often paid out of operational expenses, reducing the ability to provide quality services to the population. There's also a plan to improve the quality of primary healthcare services through the expansion of Ideal Clinic programs. There's a plan to implement a comprehensive HRH plan and strategy to address the human resource requirements, including the filling of vacant posts for full implementation of universal healthcare. There's also plans to establish provincial nursing colleges with satellite campuses in all 9 provinces, expanding the primary healthcare system by integrating over 50,000 community healthcare workers into the public health system. We've seen the impact of community health workers in assisting us in curbing the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as driving, together with the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, health, wellness, and healthy lifestyle campaigns to reduce the burden of disease and ill health. In addition, improving access to maternal health services, provide prompt treatment of HIV and sexually transmitted infections, protecting children against vaccine-preventable diseases, improve the integrated management of childhood disease services, public health facilities being provided with ICT infrastructure to implement the digital health strategy, implementing the costed infrastructure plan to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of health services. These are then the targets in terms of all of the health interventions which are committed to. Specifically, as we refer to women, youth, and persons with disabilities, there needs to be targeted programs to upscale existing campaigns on new HIV infections. We need to reduce HIV prevalence to a very low amount in the next 5 years. There needs to be targeted programs on adolescent sexual and reproductive health and rights, including addressing teenage pregnancy. There needs to be mainstreaming of gender, youth, and disability rights in programs on access to education, life skills, skills development. Provinces have again made specific commitments in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, in terms of health, and particularly within health for young people. Let's move to social cohesion, right? So in terms of social cohesion, the majority of young people are interested in public affairs, 55%. There was an interesting report released yesterday which shows that South African youth, the generation that comes, I think two generations after me, Generation Z, they are most hopeful that of improvement in global conditions, and they're more hopeful than even their global peers. Yeah? There are about 11.8 million eligible voters between the ages of 18 to 29 in 2019. 9 million South Africans which are eligible to vote have not registered to vote, and many of them are young people. 46% of them are young people, according to the Independent Electoral Commission. It's also really concerning that youth voter turnout decreased about 11% between 2014 and 2019. But comparatively, we're still relatively similar to other countries for youth voter turnout. In terms of youth volunteerism, we're considered high relative to other countries, and our participation in civic duties amongst our young people has increased. What does our medium-term strategic framework say around social cohesion and safer communities, right? So what do we want to do? We want to enact the hate speech and the crimes bill. Yeah? We want to make sure that the Constitution and its values are promoted in schools through awareness campaigns and through public engagements and dialogues. We want to promote national identity using the flag, national days, major cultural and sporting events in schools, to implement the Monumental Flag Program and the I Am Flag Program, to implement the Passport of Patriotism Project to promote a common national identity through the use of national symbols. Those are the specific targets and by when all of these targets must be achieved. In terms of creating equal opportunities, inclusion and redress, there must be enforcement of the Employment Equity Act. There must be representation of designated groups. There must be outreach initiatives to change behavior in relation to gender and xenophobia. There must be an implementation of the National Action Plan to combat racism, xenophobia, and related intolerance. There must be increased support to the creative industries through the Mzansi Golden Economy Project. There must be heritage projects to transform the national heritage landscape. We must promote the study of history in schools. And there must be promotion and implementation of indigenous languages. We must support the increase of availability of educators to teach indigenous languages through language bursaries. There must be compulsory modules for public servants on diversity. There must be advocates for transformation in sport and recreation. We must support the films and documentaries telling the South African story, including the history of liberation. There should be a program on the National Archive infrastructure. There should be development and management of the resistance liberation heritage. We must monitor the implementation of the Use of Official Languages Act, and there must be promotion and development of all official languages. Those are then the specific targets which are attributed to all of the outcomes that we would want to achieve. In terms of promoting social cohesion through increased interaction across space and class, we must promote social cohesion through increased interaction across space and class by bringing people together. We must conduct, in terms of promoting active citizenry and leadership, we must conduct continuous civic and democracy education to improve participation in elections. We must maintain an accurate national common voters role to ensure the credibility of elections. We must successfully deliver general election for local government in 2021, and we must promote participation in community-based governance processes, and we must improve participation in general elections. Provinces have again contributed to what they believe should be their social cohesion responsibilities and finding space within their APPs and budgets to contribute to social cohesion. As we move to the last pillar, effective youth development machinery, the key processes underway there, so the NYDA Amendment Bill process, the National Youth Policy, the Integrated Youth Development Strategy, the National Youth Development Coordinating Forum, which is run by the department, the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, the Presidential Working Group on Youth, as well as the strengthening of youth directors. And I'm flagging this as a very high risk due to the austerity measures imposed by the National Treasury. What is the medium-term strategic framework say around mainstreaming and an effective youth development machinery? There should be monitoring of mainstreaming programs on empowerment and development of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. There should be monitoring of implementation of gender, youth, and disability responsive planning, budgeting, and monitoring and evaluation. Just in terms of our global commitments, we should continue to commit to our obligations in terms of the United Nations, the African Union, SADC, the Commonwealth, IORA, BRICS. I thought it would also be good just to give a sense of the national budget, right? So if we look at the total national budget, we see that the majority of the budget is still spent on education and health, $272 billion on education, $248 billion on health. A little bit concerning, we dialed down job creation and labor affairs, about $33 million. And we need to start getting the numbers up there, very low in terms of arts, culture, and recreation. So we're asking arts and culture to do a lot in terms of social cohesion with quite a small amount of budget. Yeah. In terms of the consultation, these are the list of all organizations which have been consulted thus far. In terms of the national consultation, many civil society organizations were consulted as part of the consultation process. Just some final views on consultations with young people. We need more private sector involvement, particularly at higher education level. We need increased vocational skills. This will help to penetrate the labor market. Young people want to farm. There's lots of requests for agricultural support. Technical and artisan schools must accommodate youth who are not academically aligned. Government has to be seen to rooting out corruption and nepotism. There has to be recreational facilities in townships. Employment opportunities should be accessible to youth. We should improve access to structures like the NYDA. And we should encourage youth to be agents of change in caring for the environment in light of climate change. I'm not going to go through all of the consultation reports, but those are some of them. So as we come to the conclusion of the monitoring and evaluation, these are the broad sort of targets.
Recording stopped.
That have been set for the medium-term strategic framework for the integrated youth development strategy. Now, it's not good enough to be able to just set targets. So our commitment to the PC, but also to the youth sector at large, is to say that in terms of the plans around integrated youth development strategy, our intention is to hold the line departments and provinces accountable for what they've committed to. And every year in November, progress report from 2021 to 2025 will be presented on the achievement in terms of the set targets for integrated youth development strategy. And in early December from 2021 to 2025, every year a forum will be convened with the youth sector to provide a report back to focus on what is working, what is not working, so that the IYDS doesn't sit as a document and just remain a document. It becomes the lived experiences of young people in the country. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I know it's a very long presentation. Thank you for allowing me the time to complete it. I will hand back
recording
to
in progress.
You. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. Colleagues, I've just been informed by the chairperson that she has lost the connection due to load shedding. So she has requested me to proceed with the meeting until such time that she's able to rejoin. Thank you for the presentation, CEO. Honorable members, I will then allow for an opportunity for you to raise your hands and indicate whether or not you are going to be asking any questions or engaging with the presentation. I can see the hand of Honorable Luma Muhlengwa. Honorable Songo. Is that all? Honorable Ngobomkhulu.
Mine too, Chair. Honorable Shangweni, my hand function thing doesn't want to work.
Oh, okay. You are recognized, Honorable Shangweni. And then I'm seeing Honorable Umama U. Mam Joyce. So it's going to be Honorable Umam Shengwa, Honorable Shongo, Honorable Ngobo, Honorable Shangweni, and then Honorable Umam Joyce, in that order, colleagues. Umam Shengwa, we can see abona ukuthi u-unmutile uyakhuluma kodwa sikuzwa ma. Asikakuzwa mhlambe ma uzologa off bese uphinde uloge on and then sizokunikeza i-opportunity uma ngabe usubuye ukuthi uphinde ubuze umbuzo wakho ngoba sikuzwa njengamanje. Okay, let's proceed to Honorable Shongo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Whip. Mine is two quick questions. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation by the CEO. Not that the questions I have are based on the presentations, but they are out of concern with one is that what is the NYDA doing with all these complaints by young people that they are raising of people asking them for bribes before their grants are approved? And then secondly, what is the plan? What plans does the NYDA have with young people living with disabilities who wake up every day and go to disabled centers without any form of education? WIP, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Steer. I think that's a very relevant question. As well, CEO, maybe you should also indicate what implications the four targets in the current APP for the 2021 financial year. What are the implications if we are saying that the strategy is still in its draft stages? I will then also hand over to Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Members, and good morning to the CEO of NYDA and DG. This is just a question on basic education. I may have missed it, but I think there was no mention of special needs schools. And given that so many young people in this country are still sitting at home because there's a shortage of special needs schools, especially for those young people with disabilities. So I just wanted to find out if there is a way that can be mentioned as well in the document, and also that the Department of Education must look into that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Honorable Shangweni.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. Mine is just on the few points, and I'm partly happy that the CEO have said that this document won't just be a document. It will be an active document that they will work with and ensure that the line departments or the key departments that are mentioned in this document are adhering to the timelines and things that the youth have said that is needed in South Africa. And because the amount of unemployment youth, yes, on the stats that we have got, it's very problematic. And if we can do this document effectively so, and run with this document, maybe perhaps youth will have some level of hope that they will get tomorrow a job or their businesses will get funded. Now, my one is on the point that was raised in terms of big shops coming into our locations or coming into our communities and set up shop, and they sort of close the shop or the opportunity for that mama that have used to sell maybe a box of apples to just have food on the table for a family. Now, why are we going to ensure? Because sometimes what these big shops are also doing, they put the requirements so high. And I can make one example, for instance. There's a company that wants to sell cleaning equipment, maybe perhaps to spa, and put it on their line. But now the step to test this program at the FBS by the South African Bureau of Standards is so high. And young people don't have money, and this person won't have the money in order for his products to get tested and let that products be on the line and be sell alongside your Jigs, your Omos, and so forth. Now, in those instances, what is the NYDA going to do in those instances that these shops are putting the requirements so high and it makes it very difficult for those people to penetrate the market? And it happens even to your vegetables and so forth. You will have an instances where a Woolworths will say, no, your spinach must be a certain length for it to be sold on our shelves. And in that instances, young people, businesses are just falling to the cracks because the requirements and the bar is set too high, and they don't have the mentorship capacity in order to see to that their businesses are also getting on the shelf, and they give up. So I think maybe the NYDA must address also that point and see to how they can be able to assist our young people. Many of our young people are not the likes of Bonang, Boitis, and DJ Zinhle that can just tomorrow do a product and the product is successful. They need a proper mentorship. They need the funding that is required for testing of their products, that the products are being also sold alongside other products on the shelves. And then there was the one of improvement of businesses in major cities on the slide, CEO. And I like to find out which are these major cities and major towns, and how were they identified in order to improve businesses? Because you know our youth, if you look in terms of Lanebird, Yohamka, and all of those small towns, our youth doesn't have hope. Our youth doesn't have hope, and it's a scary sight to see a youth in these small towns. There's no economic growth. There's no jobs for them. And that is a scary sight to see in all of these small towns. There is really nothing happening. And we are only focusing mainly on
your Cape Towns, your Johannesburgs, your Durbans, and so forth. What are we going to do about your small villages? And give hope to youth in the smallest, smallest village in South Africa. And then on the last point, Chair, that the CEO have also raised a point on elections. Our youth, majority of our youth, and there's a reality, they are not registered. Our youth have lost hope in our governments. They are not registered. They don't want to go and vote. Now, as the NYDA, to raise also effective awareness campaigns. I don't want you to become a political party, or so forth. But how are we going to ensure that our youth are getting registered? Because the reality is, our youth are not registered to vote. And that is the reality. And I think we need to talk about it as to see how we're going to ensure that our youth get registered so that they, whether they choose to go and vote or not to vote, but at least let there be a one step to go and register. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dangwini. I think you've really raised some important questions for us to get better clarity on the areas of concern that you have picked up on. One of the issues CEO one is interested in is the issue of the costing. How much is it going to cost to implement the interventions that you have highlighted in the document? For instance, I just want to check if you've been able to correctly cost the strategy itself. But also, in terms of accountability, CEO, one would like to know who will hold the lead and contributing departments to account, as you have highlighted in the document itself. And also, how will the NYDA monitor and evaluate the departments that would actually give effect and implement the interventions as outlined? I'll then hand over to Honorable Mam Joyce. I see that Umam Shengo is back, but let us give Umam Joyce a chance, and then we'll check whether Umam Shengo is audible or not.
Thank you, Honorable Masiko, and good morning, everybody. Honorable Masiko, I think some of my questions have been raised by my colleagues, but as you said now that NYDA, how much is it going to cost for them to implement all those things that they are saying they want to implement? I'm thinking about that NYDA is not an, it doesn't have powers actually to implement some of the things that they are supposed to be implemented by other departments. So I would like to emphasize the question that was raised by Honorable Hlongo to say, what is NYDA doing about all complaints received from the youth? And do NYDA have a plan to engage relevant departments? Because as you know, NYDA is just an entity. It can recommend, and it can, as it has done now, by going and interview all those youth, and they've got their complaints. But do they have a plan to ensure that all those complaints are given to relevant departments? And after that, they are going to ensure that they monitor the departments to ensure that they address the concerns of those youth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mam Joyce. Mam Shengwa. Hey, Askuzwa Ma. Mam Shengwa. colleague, we seem to be having a problem with the speaker, Samam Shengwa. Honorable Mgweba has also indicated that she's struggling with the network due to load shedding, but I see that her hand is up. Honorable Mgweba.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues. Chair, let me then welcome the presentation by the NYDA on the Draft Monitoring and Evaluation Framework. But however, Chair, you know, Honorable Members have raised some questions in terms of how they're gonna monitor and evaluate the progress in all the departments, especially specifically in terms of our EE, the youths. But however, I'm also interested on the policy imperative 4, where they speak about increasing patriotic participation, especially having young people involved in the affairs of the country. I understand, Chair, that we are in a process of preparations for the local government elections. And I know that the NYDA in the previous presentation spoke about young people complaining about being involved in the decision-making processes in the country. And also, you know, issues of unemployment that we know all of us as honorable members. So my question, Chair, to the NYDA is that now that there's this policy imperative 4 of involving youth in this of this country, what is it that they're going to do making sure that they mobilize our first-time voters to register for the upcoming local government elections? Especially, Chair, we are in a challenge or in a difficult time of this pandemic. And I understand that it would be very difficult to mobilize young people in one central venue, because the president have also spoke about having 100 indoor activities and then also 250 outdoor. So my question is that I know it's going to be difficult to go each and every house or each and every household. Then as the NYDA, what is it that they're going to do to assist the IEC and the country at large to make sure that those first-time voters, they register and vote for the upcoming local government elections, especially that they spoke about them not being involved in terms of the decision making processes of the country. And also the second issue, Chair, I understand that there is a draft in terms of the monitoring and evaluation. But however, my last question is that did they manage to involve our youths across the country in all the structures? I'm saying in terms of the civil society, your NGOs and your CPOs, so that they are part of making sure that they input to the framework, so that at least all the issues that affect them, they are being achieved by our own government. Thank you very much, Chair. But otherwise, all the other questions has been asked by honorable members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mgweba. Ma'am Shengwa, can we give you a last attempt? And then if it's not working, we'll hand over to the CEO to respond. Okay, it seems like Ma'am Shengwa is still experiencing challenges. CEO, I will hand over to you to respond accordingly to the comments and the questions asked by the honorable members.
Thank you very much, And I think thank you for the questions. I think they are most insightful in nature. So I think in terms of Honorable Flongo's question about young people having to be bribed, or I mean, this situation has come to my attention on a periodic basis. I've posted in the chat where young people can report fraud or corruption or anything like that, where they're being requested to do things like that. We did become aware of one situation in Citibank. We placed the employee on suspension given the allegations that are there, and we're undertaking an investigation. But we please do require reports of these things happening, and then we can hold the officials to account for this despicable behavior, Chair. So please, if possible, refer young people to the fraud and corruption hotline so we can deal with these matters. In terms of Honorable Flongo's question around disability, I think the integrated youth development strategy is cross-cutting on young women and young people with disabilities, and then all vulnerable and marginalized groups. So in terms of setting targets for specifically young people living with disabilities, I think each target, so for example, you talk about participation in second chance matric rewrites or accessibility to the Department of Small Business or the NYDA funding. Young people with disabilities, there must be specific strategies to assist young people with disabilities, and that is part of the accountability and the monitoring and evaluation framework. To move to Honorable Ongobo's question around special needs schools, I did look through the document again. I think you're correct. There's no reflection on special needs schools in the current integrated youth development strategy. I will make sure that there's a section added in consultation with our counterparts from the Department of Basic Education. Thank you for raising that, Honorable Ngobo. And then if I move to Honorable Ntlangweni, in terms of market concentration, I think we fully agree, and that's the reason we sort of raised it in the document as well. And I think the idea is that for this to fundamentally change in the coming years, is one, you need more levels of regulation around economic concentration. So I think the Competition Commission is doing really good work in terms of breaking strangleholds on the market. That's the one thing. But then we also need more local government regulation. So for example, where a property developer wants to establish a new mall, but this will displace smaller retailers in the area, we're saying there needs to be greater enforcement of regulation, and there needs to be better feasibility analysis so we prevent this happening in the future. In terms of South African Bureau of Standards criteria and mentorship, so what the NYDA did was last year we introduced a grant or voucher specifically, and this was done in collaboration with the South African Bureau of Standards, to assist young people in crossing that barrier for entry for the cost of complying with the criteria of the SEDS. So we subsidize that cost. The NYDA sponsors 50% of the voucher. The SEDS sponsors the other 50%. And young people, with that voucher, they're able to get the necessary criteria they need to be able to meet the SEDS criteria, and then they're able to get their goods and services. So for example, hygiene products is one we've assisted, and they're able to get those products listed and sold through commercial and retail stores. I think if we talk about small towns versus big towns, I mean, we know that there's certain economic hubs in South Africa, and the metros account for the majority of GDP. But if we look at COGTA's district development model, it's exactly that, right? It's saying that how do we take everything that currently exists in a district, yeah? One district, one budget, one plan. How do you incorporate that so that the needs of the district are taken into account in planning? And you bring many local municipalities together. And I think COGTA really sees the district development model as core of its strategy to reinvigorate smaller towns, medium-sized towns in South Africa, so they really get to the point where they achieve their economic potential. Yeah. In terms of elections and registration, I think there was a couple of questions around it there. And during the 2019 national elections, so NYD assists the Independent Electoral Commission regarding voter registration campaign. So we partnered with the IEC, particularly leading up to the voter registration weekend, on voter education campaigns through our National Youth Service Unit to encourage young people to go out and register to vote. And then I think last year, I mean, if you look at the one registration weekend, there was 900,000 new registrations, and off that, there was 600,000 were young people. And I actually was really, really impressed with that campaign we ran at the time, you know? So I think the idea is to do something similar this year. If I go to Honorable Mgweva's questions, I mean, there is obviously concern about about the pandemic and the ability to hold registration campaigns and education campaigns. And then I think that's why the former Deputy Chief Justice has been appointed to test the feasibility of holding the local government elections in October. But if the registration weekend does go ahead, it's the NYD's plan to really, in all nine provinces, encourage young people in partnership with the IEC to go out and register to vote. Yeah? I think we also mustn't separate the economic marginalization of young people from their participation in the electoral process. Yeah? And I think that as long as we keep young people on the economic margin, their participation in public affairs will remain low. Yeah? It's an outcome of deep structural poverty in our country. Yeah? So I think we have to correct the economic marginalization question in parallel to also encouraging young people's participation in democracy. Honorable Masiko, I think very important questions around the costing of the strategy. Yeah. So these targets are drawn in consultation with the departments from the medium-term strategic framework. Now, departments have committed to the MTSF as an outcome of government, right, and out of a government planning process. And it's our understanding that is reflected in the budget votes of the respective departments which are currently being passed. Our idea is that for each pillar of the IYDS, at the back of it, we will attach the programmatic budget for each of the committed outcomes of the departments, right? So education will have the departments of higher education and basic education plus the provincial departments of education. And then that kind of like brings me to your next point. So our understanding is that all of these targets have been costed and placed in the NTSF because they are achievable targets. Yeah? It brings me to your next point, which is accountability. So how do we drive accountability? So I think accountability manifests itself at different levels. So for example, the president has a performance agreement with ministers. DGs have performance agreements with their ministers. CEOs like myself have performance agreements with their boards. So there's different levels of performance agreements regarding the accountability for what we want to achieve as a government. But I think broader than that, there's also accountability at a monitoring level. And I'm sure Dr. Benice will talk about monitoring and evaluation. And I think DPME is a massive component of what our planning, monitoring and evaluation should look like in the country. So how does NYDA drive accountability without duplicating what's already happened? Right. So this is how we see it, and I'm happy to take advice on this matter because this is a consultation. But I see accountability as within the core of the five pillars, they are now responsible departments. So within economic transformation, your key departments is probably Department of Economic Development, Public Enterprises, and Small Business Development. Within education, it's higher education and basic education. Within health, it's the Department of Health. Within social cohesion, it's social development and sports, arts, and culture. And of course, women, youth, and persons with disabilities is cross-cutting on all of this. Yeah. So our idea of accountability is that every year we will take the MTSF targets which are committed to youth. We will draw every department's achievements against those targets. We will put it into one report. Where departments have not achieved targets, they must indicate to us why they've not achieved those targets. And we'll pull that together into a report that becomes a published public document, which we present to the portfolio committee. But then we also take that document and we present to the broader youth sector. And we call each of these critical departments, we call each of the 9 provinces, and we have maybe a 2 or 3 day session where we discuss or where we hold line departments accountable for what they've committed in terms of the IYDS. So that there is that accountability mechanism. If I move to Honorable Maluleka's question, I think when it relates to complaints and services, well, I say complaints and services, right? My idea is that NYDA officers should never just be proponents of NYDA products and services, right? Is that the vision is that when you walk into an NYDA office, even though you might not need a grant or a job, when we do an assessment of you, we should be able to refer you to a drug rehabilitation site closest to where you live, if that is what you need. Yeah? We should be able to enroll you in a second chance matric rewrite program, for example. You know, and a big part of our job at the moment is receiving views of young people and pointing them in the right direction. You know, or complaints of young people and assisting them in resolving their complaints. Yeah. I think I've answered Honorable Maluleka's question regarding the monitoring of departments as well. And I think we do hold that very clear. I think the document is just words without a clear monitoring and evaluation framework. And then I think with Honorable Mukweba, we fully agree around local government elections. We have to drive up the participation rate of young people in the elections, and I think it is on the program of action for the NYDA for this financial year, given that it is a local government election year. Yeah, thanks very much. Whoop, I'll hand back to you. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Thank you very much. CEO, I don't know whether, DG's hand is up. DG, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. There were a few questions that I would like to respond to. There was a question about, access to education in terms of special schools for persons with disabilities. I just wanted to indicate that the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities and the Department of Basic Education, we will be hosting, we're planning together, we're at the planning stage, we'll be hosting a summit on access to education for persons with disabilities. It's also going to cover issues of special schools, special needs children. It will also cover the issue of children, normally children with disabilities who are not able to start school like any other child who's 6 years old or 5 years old. They start at 11 or 13 years. We also want to look at the issues of how can we ensure that they have access to laptops like your university students and be able to access education even when they are at home, when they are not able to go to schools. But also, we are also going to look at the issue of access to wheelchairs. We know that is the Department of Health that is responsible for that. But we want to bring in the Department of Social Development and the Department of Health so that we can be able to address this. There was also a question on access to markets for farmers. The fact that some farmers can't sell because the produce companies, they would have restrictions. As indicated that we have signed an MOU with the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, there are a few issues that we have agreed on that they need to review, even the policies. One of them is on access to acquisition of land. The other one is rural enterprise and cooperative support. How do they support them? How many, like to look at the number of farmers who are producing, how do they access the market, and the issue of access to markets generally. Also the issue of voter registration. I know it was about young people, but we can't leave out young people with disabilities. We will be hosting a webinar with the IEC to raise awareness on the new products, because the IEC has developed new products for persons with disabilities that they can register on the phone, or they can register in different ways. They explain the different ways that will make it easier for persons with disabilities to register and to be able to vote. Also now they have a braille voting system. So we are going to raise awareness. We are going to have all the, not just the presidential working group on disability, but all the entire national machinery on persons with disabilities, they will be attending. I think there was a question about how NYDA is going to monitor other government departments. Dr. Sakala will be presenting later on the monitoring and evaluation framework. The responsibility of the NYDA is to ensure youth development. The responsibility for monitoring the implementation of the National Youth Policy, even the NYDA is monitored by the department. So even those departments that are not complying, the department has the responsibility to ensure that it monitors them. The NYDA reports on all the government departments' reports. There was a question, why are they reporting on programs that are not within their mandate, that are under different departments. So they have that responsibility because they are responsible for the implementation of the national youth policy. So for them, in order for them to be able to assess whether the national youth policy is being implemented or has impact, they have to look at the entire program of young people. Thank you very much. That's what I wanted to add. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG. Colleagues, are we having any further hands that would like to do follow-up questions on the responses that have been given? CEO, I don't know whether this is a new hand. Honorable Ngweba, I don't know whether it's a new hand. Can you indicate?
Sorry, Chair, I just realized I did not answer the question on consultation. We consulted all the critical government departments who are impacted by the strategy. We consulted the provincial governments through the Office of the Premier. We consulted civil society. We can give a detailed list of all the civil society organizations that were consulted. And we also consulted Presidency in the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and also the department, our line department, Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, has been supporting us on all of these consultations. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable Ngweba, is it a new hand?
No, thank you, Chair. It's an old hand. Sorry.
Oh, okay, thank you. Ma'am Sondi?
Thank you, Chair. Okokuqala ndicela uxolo, but I reported to Nelly's about my problem. I just get in and then I've been out. I was having a serious meeting with the ex-mine workers in Grondal, Marikana Northwest. So I'm sorry about that. E-presentation azange ndive, but I just want to ask a simple question that is there access for the youth from the rural areas in this NYDA, or else are they represented fully in this NYDA, the youth from the rural areas? It's only a question I want to know, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ma'am Sondi, CEO, youth representations from rural areas.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think it's a very fair question. I think that we consulted far and wide as possible, and in every session that we had in provinces, we tried to make sure that rural young people's voices were raised as well. I think you would have also seen, Chair, when I presented specific inputs from young people who are living in rural areas and their concerns about marginalization and access to services. So I think certainly it's a core focus. The rural strategy is very important for us here. And I mean, it's been built into how we do our work as an organization as well. Yeah. So so yes, I think we try to cover rural areas as far as possible.
Thank you very much once again, CEO, as well as the DG. Colleagues, I'm not seeing any further hands that would seek to ask follow-up questions. I would therefore assume that this item of the agenda has been properly addressed and attended to. I think, yes, we've come to the end of this item, and we would like to thank the National Youth Development Agency for the presentation and the report that has been given. It has been well received by the portfolio committee, and we thank the department as well for the support that it has given this process. CEO, would like to thank you and your team for the work that you have put in ensuring that this document has found itself to us as a portfolio committee. Thank you very much for that. We will then, colleagues, move to the next agenda item, which is the monitoring and evaluation presentation by the department. I'll hand over to you and your team, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Also, I won't waste the committee's time by saying what she's going to say. I'll request Dr. Sahala to do the presentation. I'll respond to the questions later. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks, DG. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, DG, and our presentation today is focused on providing progress on the National Youth Policy, but then most importantly, we will be focusing on the M&E framework to track implementation of the policy. In the next slide, we are focusing on the background. The purpose of the presentation, I've already alluded that it is to provide an update on the National Youth, the draft monitoring and evaluation framework for the National Youth Policy 2030. In terms of the background, I'm not going to go into the details. We're just giving the background of the situation of young people in our country. But then what I would like to just emphasize is that we are all aware that we have developed the National Youth Policy 2020-2030, which was approved recently by Cabinet. In terms of the definition, we define young people as those between the ages of 14 to 35. And, the policy identifies key priorities and interventions that will act as catalysts to help clear critical blockages for youth to achieve positive youth development. And this intervention, they are aimed at ensuring optimal development of young people, both as individuals, but then also as members of South African society by enhancing their capabilities to transform the economy and also the country. And then we have developed draft M&E framework to track National Youth Policy implementation. The department, the reason why it has actually developed the M&E framework is to ensure that there is an M&E system that is accessible to all those who are implementing youth programs. And this is not only going to track implementation in government only, but then it is going to track implementation even in civil society and private sector. Describe the approach to be followed in producing credible, accurate data on an ongoing basis. We will be tracking implementation of the policy on an ongoing basis, quarterly, half yearly, as well as annually. it specifies the theory of change, which highlights the envisaged results of the National Youth Policy. We will also have a detailed M&E plan with objectives, qualitative as well as quantitative indicators to track implementation of the policy. What is it that we are going to be seeing that in terms of tracking how we are faring with the policy implementation? There will also be baselines and targets as well as plans for data collection, analysis, reporting, and usage. The M&E system will have the framework. It will also have the M&E tools as well as the guideline document to enable collection of reliable data, review of youth development programs, and will also inform resource allocation. These indicators will be to a larger extent disaggregated in terms of gender, race, disability, and location. And then the next slide actually highlights the scope of work, plan, and methodology which has been followed in developing this M&E framework. The first step which we have actually done in developing the M&E framework is to conduct situational analysis. There we actually had an inception meeting which was participatory, and then we also collected data through document review and interviews. And then the second step which we followed was to design monitoring, evaluation, and learning framework and plan, and to also conduct the validation process. This is where national workshops were actually held with various implementing agents represented by national government departments, represented by civil society organizations, also represented by other institutions that are rendering youth development, including academics. And then we then specified the indicators, what are the qualitative and quantitative indicators which we will also be looking at to track implementation of the policy. What is the means of verification? How are we going to verify that we have actually attained the set results? And we are still projecting. And then the next step was that of documentation and validation. In documentation and validation, that is where we will be focusing on developing other M&E systems, such as development of M&E tools as well as reporting templates. These reporting templates are the ones that are going to be used in order to collect data from various implementing agents.
Recording stopped.
Distributed to various implementing agents so that they can complete the data that is being requested. And then the other step that we followed was to highlight the institutional arrangements. The institutional arrangements specify various role players, and then how the reporting channels will be the nature of reporting channels to be followed in order to ensure accountability. And then we will then develop the guideline framework document, and then ensure that data is actually stored so that it can actually be used as baseline for further
recording in progress.
And then we will have quality assurance plans in place. Then the other step that is going to be followed is the piloting and testing. This is where we are going to be piloting the framework before we roll it out for implementation. So here we will actually be testing the feasibility of using this M&E framework as well as the M&E tools and guideline documents, so that we can see if maybe there are any gaps that have to be identified prior to the rollout. And then we will conduct capacity building sessions with various implementing agents across various sectors. This is where we will be building session in government, civil society, as well as business and other youth development institutions to ensure that the understanding
on how implementation is going to be conducted. And then the final step is that of learning for the purpose of, you know, improvement as well. There are various principles which have to be, we have to actually take into, which we took into account when developing the M&E framework. The first one is ensuring compliance. When developing the M&E framework,
recording stopped.
The aim is to track implementation of the National Youth Policy so that there is compliance from various implementing agents in terms of the interventions or the targets which have been set within the National Youth Policy. Secondly, the second principle which we have actually considered is that of selecting sound indicators. Here we are acknowledging the fact that we are not going to be tracking everything that is contained within the National Youth Policy. We already have got the Integrated Youth Development Strategy that is going to focus on all the indicators. Ours is just to select high-level indicators which are going to be used as the basis for reporting. And then the third principle is that of standardization. Reporting will be standardized to ensure uniformity. In order to minimize the disparities, we will make sure that there is standardization. Hence, we are going to be using a template which will be distributed to various role players. And then the fourth principle is that of you know, no baseline. Here we are saying that data will be captured for new indicators as well as those that are without baseline. Where possible, indicators that are close to the year 2020 are the ones that are going to be collected. And then the fifth principle is that of implementing agents. The M&E framework relies on various stakeholders' current data and reporting structures related to the youth. As a result, key youth development indicators have been from data that is currently being collected. Here, we are mindful of the fact that the institutions that are responsible for youth development already have got data that they are using. Hence, we are also relying on the data that is currently being collected. And then the sixth principle is the principle of evaluation. Outcome indicators for which data is currently not collected will be included in future based on the evaluation to be conducted. There's going to be periodic evaluations that are conducted. For an example, if you look at the indicators on youth set aside for mining rights ownership, as well as that the one for procurement from youth-owned business and land ownership, the ones that are actually included here, these are some of the indicators which were not, where data was not previously included. And then now in the current M&E framework, we are going to make sure that we actually collect data on all these indicators. And then the seventh principle is that of reporting by state bodies. There is presently no data collection responsibilities for business, labor, and civil society organizations. In the previous M&E framework for 2015, we did not have data collection responsibility for business, labor, and civil society organizations. And I think I've just lost my slide. Okay, we did not have data for business, labor, and civil society organization. However, Department of Trade, Industry, and the DTIC has developed a target for National Youth Employment Accord together with the private sector. So here we would want on a gradual basis to make sure that we extend our reporting to both, I mean, to business, labor, and civil society, because in our youth employment accord, they also have got commitments which they have made with regard to youth development,
Recording in progress.
And then the eighth principle is that of disaggregation. In terms of disaggregation, I've already alluded to the fact that we will take into account that there is disaggregation of data in terms of age, gender, disability, geographic location, and race for youth, that it is actually applied consistently across various implementing agents. For an example, the Department of Health currently is not capturing is capturing data for youth between the ages of 24 to 35 year olds, but only for 10 to 24 year olds. And for SES SA, data is only captured for those 15 to 34 year olds. So we are going to make sure that you know, where possible, we also capture data to show what, you know, the gender disaggregation, race, locality, as well as geographic location. Principle nine is that of supporting the data sources. This MNE framework relies on funding of some of the national studies, like the South African National Youth Health, Youth Risk Behavior Survey, the South African National HIV Prevalence Incidence and Behavior Survey, and South African National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. All these surveys, they are collected by Medical Research Council and the HSRC. So it is recommended that the current departments should actually continue to fund these studies or these surveys, which are actually part of implementation of this MNE framework. And then we are looking into the MNE framework on various indicators that are aligned to the national youth policy. The first, the 12 indicators which we are looking at are those that are contained within education, skills, and second chance. This is our policy imperative one in the national youth policy. Firstly, we look at the outcome statement, and our outcome statement is to have increase in youth with relevant skills and learning outcomes to meet the present and the future of the country for improved economic growth. Here there are two outcome indicators that we are looking at, as well as the 10 indicators which are output indicators which are highlighted in this slide. The first one, for which you will see in brackets, there is an implementing agent. The institution that is highlighted there is not the only institution that is responsible for that specific indicator, but this is the institution that is responsible for collecting data from other implementing agents. So I just wanted to highlight that, so that as and when you see the institution in brackets, you will note that it is the lead institution in that regard. The first indicator is the percentage distribution of the highest level of education attained by youth, with SES SA as the lead level. The second one is the level to which young people are satisfied with their holistic educational or learning opportunities, including both academic support and building self-esteem. Here we are saying we are going to be using the U report. This is going to be the report where data is going to be collected directly from young people. And this report, the U report system, is the system which the department will be developing jointly with UNICEF in order to collect data directly from young people themselves. And then the output indicators, the first one is the total enrollment in early childhood education and early learning programs. Second one, total gross enrollment ratio in secondary education. The third one is national senior certificate examination pass rate. And then the fourth one is the number of young people enrolled in matric or grade 12 or matric rewrite program. Number of learners who obtain subject pass towards national senior certificate through second chance program. All these indicators that I've highlighted, the Department of Basic Education is going to be the lead department to actually collate and submit data in that regard.
And then the other indicator that we will be looking at is the number of young people supported through the NYDA's Life Skills and Job Preparedness Program, and then the number of young people supported through individual and group career guidance interventions. Here we are going to have DHET as well as the NYDA departments. The number of young people supported through NYDA jobs placement, number of university students who obtain NSFAS and private sector financial assistance, as well as the number of TVET students who obtain NSFAS and private sector financial assistance. I think there is a repetition of two indicators here. Next slide. In the policy imperative, economic participation, job creation, and entrepreneurship, there will be 17 indicators in this regard. Our outcome statement is increase in experience and employable youth participating in urban and rural economy, both in paid employment and as entrepreneurs. So here we are looking at young people who are participating in paid employment, and then also those who are entrepreneurs. There are four outcome indicators and also output indicators which we have specified here. The first two indicators, they will be collated by StatsSA, is unemployment rate, or the percentage of 15 to 35 year olds who are unemployed, the NEET rate amongst 15 to 35 year olds. And then the other indicator is the level to which economic or wealth expectations of young people are met. This is going to be conducted through a research which is to be undertaken by our department. The level to which COVID-19 induced unemployment is reduced. This is the short term indicator which is based on the current pandemic. Hence, we are saying that it is a short-term indicator because it is going to be dependent on the pandemic. The output indicators in that regard is the percentage of young people employed in the public service. This indicator will be collected by the DPSA. And then the reason for putting this is because we have realized that the public sector is actually gray, so there is a need to track succession through tracking the number of young people who are in the public service. But then the other aim is to also ensure that we retain young people in the public sector. Percentage of public works participants who are youth, and the number of interns 18 to 35 year old who are successfully placed in government departments and SOEs who received employment within 2 years after completing the internship. Here we are actually saying that we must go beyond just placement of young people, but then we must also track whether upon participating in internship, young people are able to be successfully placed in jobs. Number of interns who are successfully placed in government departments and SOEs, number of youth participating in Department of Small Business Development Enterprise program, number of young entrepreneurs supported. This we are going to be tracking through NYDA and Department of Small Business Development. Number of young people participating in DTIC supported program, value of DFI's contribution towards youth owned enterprises, the level of inclusion of labor and private sector or business in target setting for the National Youth Employment Accord, percentage of expenditure for youth set aside target in specific sectors. Here we will be looking at sectors that have got high absorption capacity, such as your manufacturing, mining, and then we will be taking the 30% youth set aside target, percentage or number of young producers supported by Department of Land Reform, number of youth participating in mining in participating in mining projects implemented by the Department of Mineral Resources. And then on the policy imperative on health and on health, the outcome statement is improve the physical and mental well-being of young people. There are 17 indicators also in that regard, and we have got outcome indicators as well as output indicators. The first indicator that we will be the percentage of death amongst the youth caused by tuberculosis, percentage of youth who are obese. When NYDA was presenting on the IYDS, one of the challenges faced by young people is risky behaviors where young people are actually exposed to unhealthy behaviors. So here we will also be taking the percentage of young people who are obese, HIV prevalence amongst young people, number of mental health separation for 18-year-olds and under.
DJ Chair, on a point of order.
Yes, Honorable Tanguni, sorry, I couldn't unlock my phone.
No, I'm just proposing, like, it seems like the DJ is reading now line by line, and as so great.
Okay.
And can you just talk to the presentation, because we have to read line by line, I really, as so great, and we are running against time.
Yeah, I've picked it up. Doctor, can you please pick up on the most important issues with regards to each slide that you are presenting, and if we are going line by line, it's true, we won't be able to make the time that we've allocated for this meeting.
Thanks. I will just select, you know, few indicators rather than reading all of them. Thanks, Chairperson. I've noted that. And then on the output indicators, I think because of high rate of substance abuse amongst young people, we will also be taking percentage of young people who report binge drinking, and then the number of also because of the of high rate of unhealthy behaviors amongst young people, we will also be tracking young people participating in sports and recreation activities. In this, we have also included the number of youth receiving health support from COVID-19 health related programs. And this is also a short-term indicator. And then in the next slide, we are looking at social cohesion and nation building. And here we are going to be looking at the outcome statement is increased patriotic participation and meaningful inclusion of youth in the affairs of the country. In this regard, because we are encouraging volunteer work, the first indicator actually looks at a percentage of young people participating in volunteer work, but then also because of the critical nature of civic participation, we will also be tracking percentage of young people who voted in the most national in the most recent national, provincial, and municipal election. And then the other output indicators that we will be looking at is the number of young people participating in NYS projects, as well as number of youth participating in cultural and creative industries. And then the final policy imperative is effective youth development machinery. Here, the outcome statement is to ensure well-coordinated, integrated functioning system in place to support implementation of the of this policy imperative. And then I'm also not going to be highlighting all this because CEO of the NYDA also mentioned that when he was actually mentioning the last pillar of the national youth policy. But then you can see the various machinery tools which we will also be having in place
in order to track implementation of the implementation of the MNE framework. I'm now going to go to the next slide. In this slide, we are just highlighting the consultation process which we actually followed in ensuring that we consult the MNE framework, and then we have also highlighted the various institutions as well as the participants that we have consulted in that regard, and we are still going to be continuing with our consultation. We are now planning a validation workshop so that we can validate the indicators that we have actually set. I would just like to say that after approval of the National Youth Development Policy, provinces and national departments are to develop implementation strategy to deepen implementation of the policy. And then we will also have the formative impact evaluation, which is planned to be in the year 2024, and a summative impact evaluation would be conducted in 2029. And then we have an activity plan which we have specified various activities. I'm not going to go into detail except that once this MNE framework is finalized, we will process to cluster and also to cabinet for approval. Once it is approved, we will continue with our capacity building program in order to ensure that various implementing agents, they are capacitated on this MNE framework. And then as a way forward, we are continuing to popularize the National Youth Policy. We have got the policy translated into domestic languages. These are some of the languages which we already have in place. We also have got the SPEDI version, which we received this week. The Braille printing has also commenced, and I'm sure we will soon also release that. And then validation workshop will be conducted, and this MNE framework will be piloted. I think I've already mentioned that we will have capacity building session. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to honorable members.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thank you to the DG as well. Colleagues, I'll give you an opportunity to raise hands for questions and comments on the presentation that we have just received on the monitoring and evaluation. Is everyone covered? Colleagues, am I audible?
Hello. Good afternoon, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Tim.
No, let me then welcome the presentation, but I think I'm covered because I know that one of the questions I've asked to the NYDA has been presented by the department on the readiness in terms of mobilizing young people for the local government elections. But however, I'm covered on my side.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mgweba. Doctor, maybe you may just highlight briefly how the department will achieve its target of producing the two National Youth Policy implementation monitoring reports for the current financial year, if the monitoring and evaluation framework has not yet been finalized. Can you just briefly explain to us how we'll be able to achieve those targets which were set? And also, what are the time frames for the scope of work, the plan, and the methodology as outlined in the presentation? I don't see any other hand. I think honorable members are either cut off the meeting or they are covered by the presentation. I'll hand over to you, Doctor, to respond to the questions which have been raised.
No, we are covered, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dagwini. Doctor?
Thanks, Chairperson. The reason we are having the two monitoring reports in the last two quarters is because we wanted to give ourselves time to finalize this M&E framework. So our view is that by end of July we would have finalized the M&E framework, and also test it so that in the last two quarters it is actually ready to be used to collect data for the policy monitoring report for the last two quarters. And then the second question, my apology, I didn't hear the second question. Chairperson.
The second question, Doctor, related to the time frames for the scope of work as outlined in the presentation. What are the time frames?
Okay, the time frame for the scope of work in terms of the other steps we've already done them, like the first step on situational analysis is already completed, and then the national workshops we have already had some, but then they are still continuing. And then in terms of documentation and validation, we are going to be having the validation workshop by the second week of July, and then we will pilot and test this framework by September. So, you know, those are the timelines in terms of the scope of work, so that we can also, you know, we can make sure that by end of September we have concluded the M&E framework process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Colleagues, I don't see any other hands that wish to comment on the matter. It then brings this item of the agenda to the close. Thank you very much, DG, and the members of the department that you have brought along. We appreciate the good work that is being done and the progress thereof. And we're hoping that you will take notes from what honorable members have raised. Thank you very much. And I think we can now dismiss you officially from the meeting.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
you very
much
for the members. Thank you.
Thank you, goodbye.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Nelisa, do we still have an item left from the agenda?
Yes, Chairperson, it's only 2/3 of minutes of the 14th of May and 18th.
Okay, can you fly those minutes, please? I see that other members have left. I wasn't dismissing the members, I was only dismissing the department. Can you ask them on the side to rejoin the meeting so that we can adopt these minutes and close the meeting? Nelisa?
I will do that, sir. Thanks.
Okay.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Chair, sorry, I was kicked out of the meeting. I only see Mamsemba who's not here. I'm trying to call.
And Honorable Mkweba as well has left.
She's not getting the phone. Oh, she's...
Okay, no, but it's fine. Colleagues, I think we have received the minutes beforehand, and we've all gone through the minutes. Does any member wish to raise any issue under any item on the minutes that we have received? These are minutes for the meeting of Friday, the 14th of May, 2021, colleagues. If we are not having any, can I have a hand that adopts the minutes, a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 14th of May, 2021, as we are.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Can I have a seconder?
Yes, Chairperson. I second for the adoption of the minutes of the 14th of May as a true reflection of what we discussed.
Thank you very much, Ma'am Joyce. Nelly, are we having a second set? Nelly, sir?
I've flighted them. Minutes of the 18th February. Should be Tuesday.
Okay. Colleagues, the second set of minutes have been flighted. You have received them in your email. Is there a hand that wishes to make any changes to the minutes or additions or any corrections? Okay, I'm not seeing any hand, colleagues. Can I have a mover for the adoption of these minutes?
Thanks again, Chair. I move for the adoption of the above minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I see the hand of Mam Tengwa is up, but her mic is not working. Mam Tengwa is seconding the mover for the adoption of the minutes. Okay. Thank you very much, colleagues. I think we've come to the end of the meeting as we have exhausted all the agenda items in today's agenda for today's meeting. Let me thank you very much for the contributions that you have made. And yes, the meeting is officially closed. Thank you and goodbye.
Recording stopped.
Hmm.